How about this new stuff? Hey, I get to see us over there too again. Braden went on Christmas holiday and bought $1 billion worth of new shit because Charlie Craven had new shit or something. I don't know. So now we got to talk into these damn microphones like we're porn stars.
Welcome back to another episode of the Slide In Podcast. This is episode 65, proudly presented by Squala and Hardy.
I had my Squala on yesterday.
Yeah.
Having up back vision.
I'm once again decked out in Squala, probably wearing the same thing I was in the last episode that went out. But sorry, it's weird to have these headphones on and be able to hear myself speak. It's going to take some getting used to.
I wish I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, me too. I fished a couple weeks ago up here, 2 weeks ago. It was 38 degrees. It was howling. And all I was wearing was this sweatshirt. It's fleece lined. It's dynamite. It's got wind resistance in the hood.
That's all you
need.
Go
check it out, squala.com or our website. I'm not sure
what we sell.
That's
all you need is just the wind break.
So good.
I mean, I was talking to somebody in the shop 3 days ago, and it was two guys, and I think they thought I was bullshitting them about fishing midges in the winter. And they're like, hey, yeah, and they're kind of looking at me. I said, it's the best dry fly fishing of the year. They didn't buy into it. I said, yeah, it's pretty cold up there. I says, if that sun's out, you can have on nothing. I mean, a sweatshirt, and you're going to be fine. They didn't buy into it.
They didn't buy into it.
Mm-mm. That's good.
That's fine. That's less fine. People.
Yeah. I was going to let them fish out back. Nope. They load.
Nope. Well, tough shit for them, huh?
Yeah. So, you're a pain in the ass. Quit messing with shit.
Yeah, I know.
You're supposed to do that before we got here.
I know. It's weird hearing yourself
talk. You see me messing with anything?
Well, yeah.
I got more shit around me. I could build a house out of the shit.
All right. Well,
I'm not messing around. Where's your fucking A game?
I'm working on my A game. It's been...
Sucks.
My A game's not great, but it's getting better.
My throat's killing me.
And thank you.
A big chug of this hot stuff.
Thank you to everybody who reached out with media help and advice. After I said I'm not a media guy, I'm becoming a media guy. I'm getting better.
You better hurry up.
Yeah, I'm working on it. All right, let's jump into some questions.
Seems chaos.
Yeah. I don't know if I can do these headphones.
You don't have to have them all the time, do you?
No.
Just so you can.
They're gone.
Why don't you leave them over there so you don't have to do all that crazy shit?
There you go.
Put them around your neck. Could hardly see them. It's all black on black.
It made me uncomfortable.
You make me uncomfortable. All this fidgeting. I never fidget.
People are going to love this episode.
I was watching Charlie. He never fidgets. Drives me crazy. Sits right beside the mic.
Really?
Max fidgets all over like me, but Charlie just sat there.
Like me. I never have my little...
toys? Look around me.
Yeah, I got to keep busy. All right. We are now officially going to start this podcast with a question from YouTube. Gavin Lawler says... Hey guys, as a fellow hunter, I was wondering if Kelly could talk about sourcing his own materials for tying. I remember he told stories a while back about cutting the ass off of roadkill deer.
And Billy.
And shearing his friend's cat, which were hilarious. Any tips on what and how to source? Funny stories like that or tips on dying would be much appreciated. Well, I think we should start by you telling those two stories, the roadkill deer and shearing your friend's cat, just for those who may not have heard.
I didn't get to shear the cat. The cat died, and I asked if he did shear it. But we used to shear the cat to do a hex nymph, because that was actually the cat's name was Bamboo. And we used to cut chunks, and he gave me one time, only once, but it did make a perfect hex fly. But for the most part, it's too long, too. It just has happened to be the right color. But it's kind of a great segue into what I want to talk about in a minute anyway. And ironically, I couldn't find, I think I keep saying you guys steal my books, but I think I give them to people and they, because I don't read them anymore. But on this whole, I went down, I want to talk about hackle and I want to talk about fly design in a minute. But I went downtown, the big city of Bozeman, went into my favorite, the antique mall, Robin's Place. God, I'm just a junkie.
Is that the one on Fine?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that
freaking
place.
Freaking incredible.
So cool.
You should have seen it. Mel and I were in there. I completely blew it. I was supposed to be at my grandson's 2-year birthday party. I thought it started at 1. It was 11 to 1.
Oops.
Yeah, I totally missed it. So then I was like, oh, shit. And so anyway, we went in anyway.
That's a lot of ones. That's
yeah, you know. I told Madison, my daughter, you should do follow-ups, you know. Dad, you're supposed to be here now. But anyway, we went shopping to kill time before we dropped her off to go to a sports show. And there was this mink shoal. This is one way, I used to do this a lot. I would go into the antique stores and buy old furs. They used to be like, now it's kind of retro coming back. Mm-hmm. But she put on this mink that a shoal, which is about, I don't know, 12, 14 inches deep, and it wraps around your shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. It was, I told Johnny, I might go back and buy it. There's probably 60 mink on it, and it's claret, the best claret, steelhead color claret, or I don't use it so much in my lake flies, but it is the most perfect claret mink I've ever seen. I'm guessing it wasn't supposed to be that color. Mm. It was a little, Mel loves this thing. I'm telling her I'm gonna get it for her. Total bullshit, I'm gonna get it for all the minks. Cut them up. But I used to do a ton of that. I remember a guy came to my store one day and I came out and I bought a mink, I don't know what they call them, just neck, it's kind of a neck warmer type thing.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was three of them or four. And he goes, what's that for? And I says, it's a lifetime of cinnamon sedge, caddis stuff. I mean, it's like, it's the most perfect hair on earth. Yeah. And there's just a ton of it. You can see them all over the place, especially the ones, I mean, Bozeman's kind of bougie, you know, it's, so there's a lot of fur in there for sale. Yeah. And, but still it was like 200 bucks or something and 60 mink. If you're a, and it's dyed perfectly clear. As far as dyeing goes, a lot of books on that. Dyeing is a lost art. I still do. I was just doing it. I have some back here. I just dyed up. I can never get the right wood duck mallard flank, like the original Zoo Cougar. And so, you know, there's recipes. There's a thing on Facebook that I go to, and I think it's just Dyeing Fly Tying Materials. So I can't remember the name of it. You subscribe to it. And there's people in there. They'll have the recipes. It's really cool. Like this guy just said he sent one for a wood duck and he says, closest one I've found. And it was the simplest one I've ever seen. It was like one tablespoon of writ number or something. I can't remember what it was called. And a cup of water. Mm. How much harder is that? And then basically dyeing is just about rather you heat it or you don't heat it, cold dyeing, wet, you know, hot dyeing. But we used to do it all the time. Just like we used to cut all our own materials because you couldn't find any.
Right.
You know, you could get them, but there's just not that much. But when it comes to harvesting stuff, if you're a hunter, it's not going to bother you. Like the other story was that I used to cut it was roadkill. I lived in Michigan. There's, you know, they're like a plague. There's so many deer.
Right.
And it's, especially I lived on Bunker Hill Road, or just off of it. And you could drive that thing. One thing we had is we had a little herd of piebald whitetails, which are pure white. I was just waiting for one of those sumbitches to get killed. Because, I mean, if you could get a pure, but they usually kind of palomino looking, like a little spot or paints, you know, they're like paint horse where they've got spots on them, but they could be big chunks. And so, but I used to do it a lot, drive up there in the morning before I went to work to see if one got tipped over. And if I saw one, I never saw one of the piebalds. And there was one that was a complete albino, head to toe, right? Usually there's, like I said, spots. But, and I would, you know, I'd see one and I would, if you get out, I didn't do it in the summer so much because the hair's kind of shit. In particular, white belly hair, right? Well, you buy it, you get this little tiny chunk until Josh Varner came along and actually has decent shit. But, I mean, his hair's epic, right? But before that, you buy, it would never tan it. So it's always a curled up piece of shit you get and you're trying to get deer hair out of it for belly because it's only white. You can't make white hair. You can't have bleached hair and then make it white. It doesn't work. It always looks bleached, right? And so you got to have belly or ass. And so I would go up, see a dead deer, especially in the fall, man. And then you really got lots of them. They're everywhere. And I just kept a skinny knife with me and I'd cut the ass rump, the patches off the ass. They're not very big. Sometimes they're not much bigger than a, you know, small paper plate. But there's one on each side and the hair's generally pretty good. And then I'd take the belly patch out and just skin it and leave it, right?
This episode is brought to you by Hardy. Founded in 1872 in Alnwick, England, Hardy is one of the most respected names in fly fishing. They spent over a century doing things properly. Hardy rods and reels are built with a deep respect for craft and tradition. There's a quiet confidence to their gear, clean lines, purposeful designs, and performance that doesn't need explaining. This is equipment made by people who understand that fly fishing is as much about feel and restraint as it is about power. When you fish hardy, you're fishing a lineage that stretches back generations, refined over time, shaped by rivers, and trusted by anglers who care deeply about quality. If you're drawn to gear with real heritage, thoughtful craftsmanship, and unmistakable British roots, take a look at Hardy. Some things are worth doing the right way.
That was the story, but I've just always wanted to meet the guy from the road department that says, "Whoa, there's some fucking psycho out here. There's some satanic shit going on out there, man. They're taking the asses out of the whitetails." But
I think that was the first thing I ever heard about you.
Ass harvester? Whoever, that's a different story.
Yeah. It was the 70s. I think that was the first story I ever heard about you. I can't remember who told me it, but it was before I knew who you were. I wasn't really big into fly fishing, but somebody told me that story. I was like, that's hilarious. There's got to be some game warden or highway patrol, somebody who keeps finding these.
Actually, I did tell one of the DOT guys. Really? He lived up behind... He was a good friend of my dad's, and he lived up behind there. He says, "If you ever see those, that's me out there, just in case." I also used to harvest mallards a ton, because, again, living on Lake Michigan, everybody's got to feed the damn things, right?
Right.
And I had a Delta 88 four-door, or two-door, I mean. I'm pretty sure that was a four, I don't remember. But a big old ghetto cruiser, right? Just giant cars back in the day. And there's this lady behind my fly shop that fed the mallards. Mm-hmm. Somebody went through and took out five of them right on a road. And it's on, what is that? 3 Mile, I think. 3 Mile Road. And it was right behind the shop. And I went around, just going back to the house that way. And there's five dead mallards right in front of her house. And I jump out and throw them in my trunk. So I don't want her to see me that it's me, because she knows me.
Right.
And I get home and they weren't dead. And I opened the trunk, two of them flew out. And they're just scared the living shit out of me. The other ones were pretty well not getting up. So I dispatched of them, but they were wrecked. I mean, they were, but the other two flew away. I mean, they flew like they were going right back. They knew where they were going too. Right. But I used to do that a lot, but mallards, I got a video on how to do that. Cause I would, strip the flank feathers and just cut the wings up.
Yeah.
That's all I used on them. So I didn't use the breasts and just use the flanks and the wings. And so just real easy. But if you're going to harvest that stuff, that's what this, that was the whole start of this story. For those of you not watching, but this is Fly Tying Materials by Eric Leiser, 1973. And it's going to segue into this book, so something else. But, and it's showing here how to skin a rooster, how to skin a woodchuck, but, and just in case Dan Green, Jordan Green's husband is listening, you skin it all the way to the skin, Dan. Not leaving an inch and a half of fat for Kelly to get rid of. But if you're going to do that, it's really basic. It's first thing you do is you skin it out. And then the thing people miss most often is they don't wash it. And then you just wash anything. You don't care what it is in Dawn dishwashing detergent. I don't care if it's whitetail. I don't care if it's rabbit. I don't give a shit. You wash it, get all the shit out of it, right? The blood and all the things that are going to do it. And then essentially you're not going to tan it. You're just going to rawhide it. So you just scrape it down. So you're right to the skin, salt it after you've washed it and everything, salt it down and just drain it. Just put it over a board so it can skin down or skin up, hair down, and and that will take a day to get it. If it's a rabbit, it'll take 12 hours and it'll be instant, or mink or anything like that, thin skins. And you just let it drain. And all the salt does is set the hair. That just sets the hair, and you let it, you'll see it start drying out, rub it off, salt it a couple of times, doesn't matter what salt it is. And when I was doing taxidermy, we used to have rooms where we'd have 2x4s, 8-10 foot box, and you just throw the hides on it, and just full of, you just buy that box stuff. Nobody's going to do that. But all you're doing is then just let it drain, and it's just the water on the hide's going to come out, and as it gets closer to, you'll tell when there's no water coming anymore out of the skin, then you can kind of get in and scrape it all off and flatten it out, and it'll be preserved in the size you want. You can strip it. If it's a deer hide, you do the exact same thing, but when it gets really close to being done, start cutting it up into pieces that are usable. Don't try. And that's what most people did around there. Are they, because rawhide doesn't flex. It's not leather.
Yeah.
You can send them in. You can get tans for them. You can do tan yourself tans. But, you know, at that point, you call Josh Varner and get real hair.
Right.
Because he's done it perfectly. And he's, I mean, nobody's better than him. And he's already done all the dyeing. He's done all the, and he tans all his hair.
Slidein.com, by the way, for all that Varner.
Varner? Exactly. I mean.
I think we got a bunch more coming in. I saw some.
Bajillion.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's moving here. But that's, I mean, as far as, and then feather, anything foliage-wise, like we're going to, if you're going to take wings, make sure you go in, and it's really important that you do this too. You go in right where you cut it off at the shoulder, go in and take all the meat out of the inside of the other two parts of the wing, and the humerus and the whatever it is, and then get all that meat out of there and borax the living shit out of it. Get in there and rub borax anywhere you can see meat. Mm-hmm. If you do not, you will have dermestid beetles in your house and it'll go through everything you own. I had that, because when I had my first fly shop, I had a taxidermy shop with it. And I didn't get the beetles from, and they're meat eaters. That's how you have, you know what a European mount is? Those white, it's a skull, bacon white.
Yeah.
You can do that too. You can boil them, but you can also do it, just put them in, you can send your stuff off to dermestid farms where they have nothing but beetles. Like all the museums do that.
Yeah.
And you just put them in, they just eat it.
They just eat away all of the organic
snow white
material.
Yeah, everything. And it's clean as a whistle, and it's great. Not so great, I brought in a bunch of hooks from the Paul H. Young Company, and there was a dead bird in it. And I didn't know it. And I, my old shop, and that one, my fly tying room, I had a kind of a 45 degree angle where my tying bench was in the corner, and it was walls about like in here, and it was all necks. Mm. So I could roll over and grab a neck and then, you know, come back. And one day I looked up and I saw dust in there. When you see sawdust in your bag, all your shit's gone.
Yeah.
And it eats the skin from the back. So it doesn't hurt your feathers a bit, but they're not attached to the
right
skin, so
it becomes a mess.
And then if you have
what
any,
what happened to your dun over there?
Yeah, exactly. That was a mouse. Well, the other one was that freaking dog of Melts. He's not my dog when he's a dick like that.
Right.
And if I had looked over, yesterday I was in here tying, and I heard this, and it was him ripping up one of my dun necks. And I finally decided, what is he doing? I looked over, and there's $150. Perfect Hebert dun trashed. my two best dun necks. The mouse got in one of those drawers and ate, same thing. They ate all the skin, still got every feather.
Right.
But, you know, 700-800 feathers that are all loose.
It's kind of a pain in the ass.
And it ain't pretty to look at. There's something about looking at necks. You just like, it's cool. So anyway, make sure if you're going to harvest your own shit to, really important if you're just taking the feathers, like the tail, that's one thing. Or if you're taking flanks, you usually not enough meat left to, and usually put them in bags so they can't get into them. I'm not so certain. I've asked a lot of people this because they're so freaking random. Like I don't have anything. And then you'll just suddenly have one in your stuff. I don't know if there's live on them. I don't know how they end up here.
Have right? One.
One beetle.
One beetle.
One. Oof. And they look like a little, they're brown, they're dark brown with a white, with a tan stripe, then another dark, you know, brown head, tan in the middle, brown ass. And they're totally, other than that, they're totally harmless. But I don't know if they're like on the animals. I mean, if, I don't know where they come from. No one does. And mothballs don't do shit. That's such a, don't believe that.
Well, they might get tracked in on people. I mean, are you familiar with carpet beetles?
No.
Holy shit.
My carpet parent. Burns, never carpet beetles.
Knee pads. let me transition.
Wrong answer. Wrong answer.
When I was in high school, my parents' house had a carpet beetle infestation, which...
It's from all the hippies?
What? Yeah, tons of hippies hanging liberals? Around. No, I don't know where they came from. I mean, they probably got tracked in somehow and then took hold. They might have come in through like a drain somewhere, but... My parents had to rip out all of their carpet and put new carpet in. Like we all had to get new beds and everything. All the box springs were just full of these.
We called those crabs in the '70s. That's probably the same thing. Yeah.
It's probably crabs.
They just told you they were carpet beetles.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a mystery to me because I am fanatical after I had them because it literally went through probably 20 of my necks. Back then, you had a Whiting neck or you had a Metz neck, dude. This wasn't so small investment back then. And you sure as shit didn't want to see it. And then I've seen them in people's houses where they've had mounts for like 20 years and nothing. And all of a sudden they've got one. Yeah, if they get, especially if they had bad birds bring a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered if they were on birds to start with somehow.
Probably.
But I don't know. Something that somebody out there, because they always do, write in and tell us exactly how they were. Like, no hertz wave length.
Yes. Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and let us know how bad your PTSD is from it, because my mother is still suffering from the carpet beetle infestation of 2014.
Yeah, I had that a few times too.
You had that still? Do you ever like wake up at night fearing the beetles?
Well, we call them something else, but we're going to let your mom have her story. What do you say?
That's, Mom, I hope you don't listen to this one.
You listen.
I love you dearly, and
you
I'm sorry.
You listen, you did too. I've been fly fishing for a long time, long enough to see all kinds of trends and fads and new companies come and go. It takes a lot to impress me nowadays. So when Squalla came along a few years ago, making waders and jackets and other stuff, I didn't really think much of it. But eventually, I tried a pair of their RS waders, and I was blown away, generally surprised at how much better they were than any other waders I've ever worn. Extremely comfortable, durable, well thought out, just everything you could want in a pair of waders. Since then, I've used a bunch of their other gear, and honestly, it's all great. They're a local company, Montana company, run by a bunch of serious fish heads who know what they're doing. So when you're looking at for great, you know, really good fly fishing gear that you know is made by somebody that fishes and their apparel that works as advertised, I'd highly recommend checking out Squalla. We carry a full line at the shop. You can also find them online at squallafishing.com. So, but this is a good segue about material. Well, it's just that, right? Just the harvesting. And it, like I said, you call if you've got a question. I don't work in the hair world much anymore. I still do fish, but... And I've never seen them get into a fish, but I have seen them get into shitty. Nobody does real heads anymore. We all cast them, but they would leave shit in the head, you know, grease, and you'd look and see. I was in a guy's house once, and it was on Torch Lake, I think. And I looked over, and the sun's coming in, the sun just right, and I look at it. It looks like dust is coming out of that fish's mouth.
No.
And I go, don't bring that fish to have me fix it. He goes, what's wrong with it? I says, there's beetles in it. And how can you tell? He says, because it's shitting out of its mouth. It's got sawdust coming out of its mouth. It's grossest thing. Went over and sure enough, just one in it. But I've tried everything. Freezing doesn't kill them. I've tried everything. Because if it gets in something, they bring it to my shop, right? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. Because I don't know if they got eggs. I don't know anything about the dams. I should know everything because I'm scared to death of them, but I don't know how they get there. We tried freezing a duck once for, I think, 3 weeks, maybe a month. Left it in the freezer. Didn't kill them. Raid, it's okay, but now your shit's caustic the rest of your life. It's like, it's hard to get that, clean that out too. So
you're telling me after the nuclear holocaust, it's just going to be cockroaches and beetles?
Corvids, cockroaches, and coyotes.
Indians have been
crows.
Crows, got it.
Corvids, it's the family.
Got it. Look at me, learning something new.
Look at you go.
Every day.
But the, the Indians have said that forever. And I think they're right.
Yeah.
So, but was that the question?
Yeah, pretty much.
I got to ramble. I want to ramble today on this thing because.
You? Ramble?
Yeah, but this is a self-induced ramble. Yesterday.
For people that want some background on this, by the way, Kelly walks in this morning and goes, I got shit to talk about. Slaps down 9 books and all.
It's just, it might be pertinent, I don't know, but to something. But I'm a big fan of a lot of podcasts. I mean, I like watching a lot of people's stuff. And I didn't used to, but you and Chris have got me hooked on them. And there was a comment once, I always said, and it was Charlie Craven said that he didn't use my name, but I'm sure he was talking about me because I'm the only one I know that does it. But I said something about I like to go 1 to 2 sizes bigger and hackle. And he goes, I don't like that. And Charlie's flies are perfect.
What do you mean by that? You like to go 1 to 2
sizes? If it's a 14 fly, I like to go to at least a 12, like a 12 or even 10, a 10.
Okay.
And I frequently put wet fly hackle in my dries. And I put,
and for those that may not know why, what's the main difference?
Theoretically, the wet fly hackle is softer and not as stiff. And it's supposed, like you're going to ride your fly on the tips of the hackle, right? And partridge is obviously a wet fly hackle. It's just soft, but it's speckled and it's got this. And I brought this, stop that. There's too much shit around here. I brought this book. Nobody can see it because I still want to see this death that nobody, I watch those podcasts all the time. But this is fly tying and fly fishing and fly tying. This is a European rag that's one of my favorites. I'll get you a picture of it. But inside of it, and one of the things that I love about this magazine is that one of the authors who's died now, passed down a few years back, which I didn't know, made me feel like an idiot when Howard told me that. But Oliver Edwards was probably my favorite author tire of all time.
Yeah.
He just, nobody, and he got pretty famous over here, but it took a while. But he was a legend over there. And there's just this sitting duck fly, right? And I mean, I already sent you the pictures of it so you could get it. So you'll forget this one and I'll be looking for another camera guy. But on the 22nd, I sent you this picture.
Yeah.
And the 22nd picture in here shows it from the bottom. No, that means there's one out of 24 pictures. Huh?
I didn't get that one.
I sent it on your phone.
Yeah, I looked, I didn't get it.
I sent it to you this morning. I'll get you the picture. Right. I took a good one. So anyway, there's 24 pictures. And to my point, there's also, if we want to talk about, there's another picture in here I've always talked about, flies with soul. This thing has soul.
Yes.
And I sent you that.
I got too. That one for sure.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I got thinking about what Charlie said, and I got thinking about, I for some reason, I sat down to tie a freaking Adams. I don't know if I was working with, because I want to start doing more tying things, and I was working with Hackle, and I realized, and I started looking at some of my old flies, mm-hmm. and they're not perfect like Charlie's are. They're not, or like a commercial fly is. And I got thinking about what Charlie was saying, and his flies are, and there was, I don't know, I don't think, I put in my notes too, so I didn't want to forget this, but I don't think I have tied one in 40 years, not a traditional Adams, because they came out of the bins then, you know, where an Adams would come and it was perfect. Mm-hmm. And that was like two things that really separated, you know, at one point when Umpqua first came on the scene, their stimulator and their Adams were just perfect. And nobody else was killing it like that. They were just, in particular, their stimmies, right? And so it became like, wow, look at how perfect this hackle is. Look at how perfect this is. Everything on it is very regimented, right? And I got thinking about when Charlie said that, well, he's been a commercial tire since he was like 12 years old or some shit. You couldn't freestyle. You didn't freestyle, right? And so I don't think, I did my own, and I still have a few left. I got some here. But I didn't do, as I saw that going, the progression, it was easy to go grab one out of the bin, right? Mm-hmm. Because how hard it is, an Adams, right? It's just not, it doesn't matter, parachute or not. And I started noticing that I didn't do as well guiding with those flies as I did with my old ones, which were a little bit more random, a little more loose, not technically loose. And that's where I like to always preface, loose to me means, doesn't mean your body sucks. It doesn't mean your hackle's not put on right. It doesn't mean your tails are on the wrong side of the hook. It means there's just a little bit more freedom to this fly. And so I brought all these books in, and one of them was this Eric Leisner book, where there's an irresistible in there, and it wouldn't sell. You couldn't sell this fly. If you put this fly on the table, where'd you go to? It's right here. For those of you who can see this, and I sent you a picture of this, by the way. You don't need this, but killing time. But the fly, if you look at a commercial one, the tail's long, the body's not right, the hackle's awful, the wing is ridiculous. fish like crazy.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about these, all these flies, these Adams flies that I've shown before, mm-hmm. which there's one fly and there's commercial. Rest, I think, were mine. And they're all variations of Delta wings and spent wing Adams, which there's never been a spent wing Adams, to my knowledge, other than those. And there's even parachute spents in there, right? There's just all these things. And it was like, I noticed that my flies, they weren't better ties. That's not what I'm getting at. They were not better ties.
Yeah.
They were looser ties. They were, and so I started thinking, I got up at 5 o'clock this morning. I don't know why. I was thinking of Doc Ellis and how perfect a tire he is. And I was, and I'm thinking, I used to switch my flies out when we were in trouble. And we'd get eats, and they were just easier. And so,
so you use the word loose. I can cut this if you want me to, but you use the word loose like you'd reference a loose woman. It's not a physical description, but more an essence of maybe action.
Cheap hookers, yeah. You know, more stuff going on.
Yeah,
It's not. It's what it is. It's like when Charlie said that, and when he said it. I really thought about it but he's such a technically great tire, yeah. Right? And it's really hard to be a commercial tire. You don't want it. You could have a series of loose Adams, mm-hmm. but people are so used to seeing catalogs and perfectly tied by definition, tail, everything. They're so used to it that you wouldn't want to do that and try to sell them. Everybody would look at it and go, well, why is your... what's up with this? Because we have parameters nowadays. And so like the length of the wing to the tail, to the body, to the hook gap and blah, 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 all this shit, right?
Yeah.
One of my, you know, and I think everybody has someone who shapes them. It could be an author. In my case, it was Dave Ellis. Every positive work ethic I have ever had in my life has come from that man. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything, anything positive. And then I think of some of the authors. I mean, you and Johnny are always talking about your favorite, Johnny in particular. Oh, my God. And I think, I got thinking about it. My dad started me time when I was 5. Like Charlie, when I was 12 or 13, I'm doing it commercial. But not like he was. Mine were like steelhead stuff, just rando shit, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but Dave shaped me in my work ethic. And then it was... in the beginning, and then it was the tying, right? And I would look at his flies, and then he was the first guy who came up to identify the spinner, which on the cover, I've got the pictures, I'll put that up. I'm making notes for you that you don't forget these pictures. Crip cover. But Dave was the first guy to identify how bad the spinners of our generation were. They had this one wing going across like this. Right. So it was just it was such a crucifixion. It was just this straight little wing, and there's this tiny, you know, body and tail. And he was the first guy to identify and did the triple wing spinner. It was the first person to ever do anything like that. There wasn't even a double wing back then. And he did it in Umpqua. It was a huge selling fly. And there are a lot of things morphed out of it. And then he's the one that convinces me that I have to look at this in a different manner. And so I started looking at, you know, everything at that point. I think, I don't know. I think it's been 45 years now where that's where I think I stopped with the whole commercial is good because it's right, because it looks right.
Yeah.
And then I took the flies, and I don't think I look at flies like anybody on earth. I look at them from the bottom and the side, mm-hmm. right? And on the side, I'm not looking at the side profile. I'm looking at this angled profile up. What's the fish see?
Yeah.
And so his fly went from, I thought I wrote it down. I was looking to see. I can't remember. It went from so I went from the triple wing, and then I put a single wing behind a dun. And it was a compara spinner, mm-hmm. and doubled it. And that went into the found link. And then the found link went into the bubble head, which I'm going to tie. That's the first one I'm going to do that tie that I do today. But I realized, it went from the cripple, the first side, the hook that was bent to the side, mm-hmm. with a single wing, and that's where you got to get the picture that's on there. And it, and what you'll see is I hadn't looked at that in a long time. That hackle is easily two sizes bigger.
Yeah.
And there's three turns, but they aren't full turns of hackle like we think of today. When I look at flies today, like when you do an Adams, and I sat down and tied one right here, and I did it the way I like it, right? I don't have three on each side. I don't have the wing the same length as the body. There's so many things that when it came around to it, you get, you know, the flies, they don't look like, they look perfect. And I love to look at people's flies. I'm always, I mean, if I pull out my, everybody's going to think if I pull out my phone, they say, oh, okay, I better watch that. There's nothing on there but flies. I mean, there are no butt flies either. There's just flies. There's like, it's like absolutely jam-packed for the most gorgeous flies. Santa, oh, some of these guys are so freak show good, but their flies are perfect. Like I look at, there was a trend where they were doing parachutes that were like 15 turns. Mm-hmm. What the f- is that supposed to look like?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's the most cool looking fly you've ever seen in your life, right? Absolutely worthless. And then I started dissecting my Adams, and I went through Joe Brooks's book and looked at those Adams that Granny Grandstorm did. And I don't know who did the other ones. I can't remember who tied those. But they're kind of loose, right? Where if you look at them, the hackle's not really tight. And then and get into the hackle in a minute. Hackle wasn't, you didn't get 10 flies out of a hackle in the old days. Mm-hmm. You got one or two if you're lucky. And it was always longer when you started than it, when you finished. And so I remember trying to tie, you know, backwards, like try to get it so one, they'd offset each other. Mm-hmm. It never did. And the flies, they were looser. And the tails, Davey McPhail, I absolutely love watching Davey McPhail. And one of the things I love about his, he is not regimented. Mm-hmm. His flies all look the same when he's done. They're perfect by his design. But he always overtails. He always overtails. And so, and then I went back and started looking at these flies, and particularly that Adams. And I was looking at the commercial ones. We have regimented things, right? So we have like the tail is the length of the body, and the body is 2/3 or whatever, and the wing is the length of the hackles and wings of the gap, and the gap and the wing's the length of that. If you do them all by design, the wings barely show. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you'll have these, and hackle has become the genetic hackle. Whiting hackle is so perfect. It is one size and you can tip, put 15 flies out of one feather.
Right.
Right. But then when you look at it from the bottom, there's this mass of hackle. Well, it looks great, but it doesn't look like a bug. So if you got the, you know, you've got this perfectly tied tail that's this, but it doesn't look like a bug because its tail's not perfect. And they're all in one gob, right? Nobody pushes them up to splay them out. Mm-hmm. They leave them in the gob. And the body's exactly that, but the body's one color. Nobody flies, body's one color. It's multi. When I did my fly tying, I always say, take two colors and just randomly mix them. Don't give a shit how it comes out. Just don't make it mono. And then the wings on most traditionals barely show, right? So a bug is not perfect. Its tail's not perfect. Its legs are definite. You know, the hackle, when you look at it, these turns of, and if you look at it from the bottom, it's just like a cylindrical thing. It's just like a tube, right?
Yeah.
And the hackle's all sticking out the side. Probably a better spinner than it is a dun. Hmm. And so, and in particular, I'm talking about duns or mayflies, I mean. And so, but the tail's not perfect. The body's not perfect. The legs are absolutely random. There's six of them, you know, and they're out to the side. And if they've got a clasper, it's out the front. And it's like the males. And so there's, it's, and God help you if they're not sitting absolutely freshly hatched as a dun that's perfect and nothing happened to it. There's three little spots sticking out there and they're all crooked. Hmm. And now our hackle's this ball. It looks perfect. And they fish. You can't argue that. Right. They fly as fish. I just found that, like, if I'm going down the river and I'm getting a refusal, I'm fishing the same parachute Adams at 600. It's like Russ Madden said, the only difference between you and everybody else in that river is your fly. And so it's easy to look at the fly and say, it's perfect. Because by our definition today, this fly is perfect. Mm-hmm. But my tails are always way too long. They're never the length of the body. I tell people when I used to do when we were doing tying videos, I used to do it, especially for beginners. I would say, you know, you got to have a reference, right? But I like my tails 1.25 to 1.5 long.
Why?
It stabilizes my fly better. And if you look at tails, they're always longer. I mean, when you look at the cover of Cripples and Spinners, we already put it up. We should have already put it up. It better be already up, that picture is. And so
otherwise, I'm out of a job.
Yes, it's a call.
It's up.
So there's the tail, and then you'll see the body. Well, that's where the bent hook came from. Almost, if it's a dun, there's any movement, they're bending their bodies. And so then you get to the legs. And when you look at them, they're just kind of out there, right? They're not these perfect angles. And I get it that the parachute atoms and an atoms have caught more flies than anything on the planet. But I kept going back to my guiding, and I can see the days. And I'd be fishing these perfect flies, and I'd say, well, let me try mine. And it would be the wings were longer, the hackles longer. It's more disheveled looking. Out of the vise like this one, it looks perfect, right? Everything on it, but the tail's longer. I don't let my tail stay in a gob. I always grab them like Davey does and pop them up so they're flared out. And the wings are longer. Everything about these things is just a little more loose, right?
So do you think that it's... I think we've come to the conclusion that they're more effective, right? At least
I wouldn't say radically. I just think when you need a, like I was talking to Howard this morning, and I can't tell you about what because the U.S. team might kill me. We're just talking about places they're going to fish, you know, and we were talking about, you know, Howard and I were talking about flies before. Before this conversation this morning, I mean, so we're talking about flies and he has really hard and fast rules on flies to what he thinks they should be looking like. But the difference, so we go out and say, I got to follow Howard on that beat. Mm-hmm. Well, if he's got a commercial, perfectly tied fly and he it's Howard, he's going to kick ass. And I come in behind him with the same fly. Like Russ says, the only difference between you and Howard, well, in this particular case, there's about a million things different.
Kelly, but you're pretty good. You ain't Howard.
Not Howard. And so, exactly. So when you do that and you come in with something slightly different, now think about this river. How many thousands of parachute atoms do we sell here?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. And so along comes a looser tied atoms, or along comes a delta wing atoms, or a complete, straight out spent atoms, or a found link where you do it in gray. You do everything the same, but you put a different wing stuff, and it's looser, right? Mm. Or this bubble head, which is, it's a completely different wing set. It's just different the way it sits. It's not. It's a dun and a spinner, but they're down. And so, but it's what I'm trying to get at is it kind of, if you can look at some of the old school stuff, and I mean, because there's some old school stuff that's really shitty ties.
Yeah.
There were some really shitty tires that were very famous in the old days. I mean, you'll see things with, I mean.
Care to name any?
No, because they probably got, a lot better. It's a 60s, 50s, 60s style. And there were, that 72 book, Joe Brooks, he's got Granny Grandson. I don't think anybody's ever tied better than that man.
Yeah.
I mean, ever. And his name, I saw one of the videos we did a little short of, and I was saying, I don't know who the hell this guy is, because I'd never looked him. I never bothered to. I thought it was like a name of a company or something, right?
It's Granny what?
Grandstorm.
Granny Grandstorm.
Yeah, and he's from your neck of the woods.
It's a hell of a name.
It's his nickname,
yeah.
Right? And I can't remember now what it came from, but he's the cleanest, my estimate. Him and Bob Jacklin's wet are as clean as anybody I've ever seen, and his dries were. And there were thousands, just like there is now, there's thousands. There's some of the best tires in the world nobody will ever hear of, ever in history. But Granny was a...
Bob Grandstrom.
Yeah.
Granny Grandstrom.
But his flies, when I was looking at them, are as good as I've ever seen, but there was this looseness to them. Mm-hmm. Tails weren't super tight, weren't exactly the same. You know, everything's not blended perfectly. The wings are right. The hackles, two different sizes in it, which I'd, if you do nothing else, try that.
Yeah.
Put a big and a little in. And, you know, if you're using, if you're doing Adams, you know, start with your light color. And I've always, you know, I know some people, Charlie, I think, does that. I think he ties his fly hackles at the same time. I never liked that, the painter side of me. You know, you start light and you add color to it. So I'd always do my grizzly and then I would tone with the, my bigger hackle was always my tone. Mm. And so I would go through and, but it really wasn't a bigger hackle. They'd start big and they get smaller. You really got one fly out of the hackle in the old days.
Yeah.
But there would always be a touch of random. And I'm going to show this picture. Don't let me forget of the Adams. I'm writing it down for you.
Thank you.
In that it's really clean. And you can, or you can take a picture of that. I don't care. It's really clean, but there's just a little bit of fracture in it. It's not like with this hackle that is perfectly 16 every single turn, mm-hmm. right? And then you put another color through it and it's perfectly that color. They're just, there's like, there's a few hanging out there, here and there. When you look at the cover of that Cripples and Spinner, look at that spinner. You can go in and look at any, I don't care if it's a dun or a spinner, particular a knockdown. They've tried to, or if it's windy, even a dun, they're trying to put their feet out and stabilize themselves.
Right.
They curve their abdomens to one side. They put a foot out here, put a foot out here. It's never perfect. Mm-hmm. That was why I think a parachute was so much better, is that at least it's shit's all over the place, but it's still not as good. I mean, it's still, it's not accurate. You wouldn't, in my eye, but anyway, I think that concludes my rant.
I've got a question for you.
Wait a second. I want to make sure I got all these. I also want to just emphasize the fact that we've been shaped by people like me because we as writers, podcasters, whatever TV people we are, you have to have a guideline because, you know, Amy is a really good friend of mine. She's had the project Healing Waters. She wanted to freestyle when we first started. Like mm-hmm. she took her first class with me.
Yeah.
I says, once you're good at this, then you can freestyle. Amy decided to freestyle on day one. So she's been Amy Freestyle since the day I've known her. And her lives became really good. Or Charlie or anybody. But David McPhail, I think, is the absolute perfect example. You rarely hear Davey say, this is how long something has to be. Or this is how long your hackle will be. Because the Europeans don't play that game. And when you look at Oliver Edwards, that fly I showed you, mm-hmm. this thing is, it's random. It's shit. It's tighter than anything. You look at the cover of this thing, that is a mayfly. You do not have to wonder what the hell you're looking at on this picture.
Right.
But when you start looking at it from underneath, there's shit going all over the place,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It isn't tight. It is not locked in like a Euro nymph. It is so random. Mm-hmm. And I really think, when you think of how many people go down this river, you and I get in that boat and we look at 30 guys in front of us going, that's interesting. We got no option. So what do we have? You're hoping that you hit a different spot. Maybe you can put the fly there better and your fly.
Yeah.
The end result, care how good a caster is, the fly sucks.
Right.
Or if they've seen 700 of them today mm-hmm. and three times they got pricked and got off, and they're still going to eat, it's like, well, they might key in on it a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Go to the fire hole. See how many screw-ups you can do there and still catch a fish.
Right.
But it's just, I wanted to get to the point where maybe this is a freestyle, an element where you could start looking around and saying, look at some of the old school well-tied, particularly Joe Brooks' book is so good. And the second one is maybe even better for flies. It doesn't have grannies in there. But if you, everybody knows what a perfect Adams is mm-hmm. or a perfect whatever, whatever fly it is, everybody knows, you can see it, there's a video about it. But after a while, I don't know why I sat down to tie that damn Adams. I think I was just playing with hackle because I wanted to see how close I could get with other colors of hackle or something. And I realized, God, I don't think I've tied one of these in 40 years or 30 at least. And then I went and got one out of the bin, and I'm like, oh, this just looks so freaking tight.
Yeah.
It just looks so, it just didn't look like, and this is from a guy that in July, like last year, I couldn't fish the 2 years. Every fly had to be for July on the rules month, weeks, had to be in 1960s or earlier, mm-hmm. right? Well, I can fish at Adams, and but I'd go take, and I look them out of the bin, I'm like, yeah.
So they look sterile.
Yeah. Sterile. There's a different word I'm thinking, generic. I mean, they're like little
mass produced.
They're just little robots all in a row, right? And it's just so freaking gross looking. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
They're absolutely beautiful. But there's just,
but
as I say, they're losing their soul.
Yeah.
They're losing their soul. They're losing the random, as you just said, perfect. And now they're losing that little bit of imperfection.
Yeah.
That's what they're losing. No bug's perfect.
Nature both is perfect, but it very much isn't.
Yeah. Right?
There's so much random.
There's a lot of shit going out out there. When they get, you're on the Henry's Fork, it's not going to happen like it is here. But if you get on this river, they're getting knocked over. The wind's blowing. The current's going like this. They're trying to keep themselves up. And I was watching on Facebook reel when I just saw this thing. And I saw this fish eat it. And so that sucks me in worse than porn does. This fish comes up and eats one of these bugs. And he says he's looking for the downwings only. And it might have been your buddy Jensen, one of his. It was such a good video. And there's just a plethora of bugs coming past this thing, and he's just doing one of these, and he would not eat a dun. Mm-hmm. They're all duns. Right. He's hit knockdowns. He's eating wings that are down. And that fish was so perfectly, he's just looking for them. He's got lots to choose from,
Right.
And so he has the opportunity to be selective. But that's the point, is that nothing, they're not as perfect as we want to tie.
So my question here is, I'm wondering if you kind of came across this realization from different sources, because I know you've talked about with hair heads on dungeons, mini dungeons of all this stuff, that you prefer a looser head that's a little bit, like, compared to all these commercial bugs that mm-hmm. are super tight, super clean.
Well, that has...
It's the same phenomenon, but did you come across it in a different...
Yeah, that's that one's, as far as compaction, is that the heads are more buoyant.
Yeah.
And so... And I use that head completely for a facade of shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't matter what's in it. It could be the worst tied head on earth. If it throws that profile, it's going to fish.
Yeah.
Right? And it's all I need them to see. But yeah, it's a lot of things. It's like, well, and observing spectacularly tied perfect flies. And for one, I don't talk about Mike much anymore. I don't know why I haven't seen him in a while. If he'd stop by now and then, Mike Mercer, Mike's
was wondering which of all the Mikes it was going to be.
Well, there's Mike
I just
Mercer.
Saw a video of him. No, I saw a video of Mike Lawson. Never mind.
Yeah, this is 50th anniversary coming up in the shop. I went to buy one of those. They sold out. So his fly plates, they sold out so quick. But anyway, back to Mike Mercer. Mike's found link or missing link. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine's the found one.
Yeah. Mike's missing link. I'm glad you do too.
is like such a, it is so random. It looks like nothing, right?
Right.
Who the hell knows what it is? The fish do. They know it's something, but you know what it isn't? Perfect.
Right.
It is not, or even another one, that which I told Johnny not to bring into our store because I thought it was such a shitty looking tie. Corn-fed caddis, maybe arguably one of the best caddis ever produced
maybe
in history.
Maybe number one sold caddis.
There's a reason things get number one because they eat the shit out of it.
Right.
Looking at it doesn't look like it's random as shit.
Yeah.
This does not give you leeway to go out and just tie a shitty loose fly.
Right.
It doesn't. That's a difference. My materials go on tight, and everything is it's down. But like, if you want to see one that look at Dave McPhail's. Hair's air dry, quill wing hair's air dry, and it's so random shit everywhere. That fly fish is like money.
So, I guess I'm struggling to comprehend the difference here between like a poorly tied fly versus designing a fly that has like some natural variation in it.
I understand. Yeah, that's a good question. Really great question, actually. Because I'm probably skipping. It's like when I was watching Charlie talking about tying videos, mine were too long, and which I just
He's the first guy who said that.
Yeah, in the world. But then Max helped save me. But he was saying, well, you know, he doesn't need to. And then Max says, yeah, but some of us do. And so, and he goes, yeah, that's true. You know, and he says, but he can look at something instantly. I mean, you don't get to that level. Few people ever get to that level, right?
Right.
And so, and he can, but most people can't. And so you build all these rules into it. And so when you, but to say, how do you tell the difference? Well, everything will look, it will look in place and it won't be like tying poorly is tying a hackle in that's spinning.
Right.
And you look and you can see a loop of the rachis isn't even down against the hook. That's loosely tied.
So it's fundamentally,
or the tails are to the side.
Right.
Right. And they're down the hook, so they're going to pierce the water. You still have to have all the aspects of a well-tied fly, but you design them into, you know, your tail set how you want it. Like I said, well, Davey always pushes his tails up. I've done that all my life. Push your tails up and splay them.
Yeah.
I don't want a point sticking out there.
No.
And they're coming off the shank of the hook, not down the bend. If it goes down the bend a little bit, your tail pierces the water and your fly sinks, right? And if you look at hackle or wing sets, you know, wing sets should be for a reason, but hackle in particular, you'll see if it's sequential wraps that are done properly. Mm-hmm. Right? Like in my flies, I put 3 wraps on.
Yep.
Like the one I'm going to tie in a little while, it has, actually has 4, but one's a tie down. And then the cripple has 3 turns. I'm trying to segment it. Well, that doesn't mean I get to do them poorly. I just, or that it should have 6, because most flies, they want you to have balance. Well, I think most flies are just way over hackled. And then the hackle's all the same length. And that's, your freedom here is to say, try 2 different size hackles, or go too big, or put a wet fly, wrap a partridge hackle through your 3 turns of your dry. Use your dry fly hackle as a stabilizer, and then put the actual movement with the softer hackle in it.
So it's fundamentally sound, but theoretically messy?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
But it won't look, I mean, does this Adams look messy to you?
No, it doesn't, but it's not. But
it's not like you would see. The tails are too long. They're splayed out. There's not that much. There's 2 different sizes hackle, so yeah. They're kind of looks rando. The wings are probably a quarter longer than you'll ever see in a bin, mm-hmm. But it's still got a 4-turn head. The head's perfect. It's what it's supposed to be, right? The body's not loose and it's tapered how it's supposed to be, right? But fundamentally, you're like, well, that tail looks longer, and why is the hackle not so dense? Why doesn't it doesn't look like it would? And that's the first thing people would say, that won't float your fly. Dude, you can float a hook. Yeah. You just, you know, don't hit it so hard down in the water.
Right.
But it's
what's the surface tension?
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean,
it's just, don't break the meniscus with your impact because your rod's too fast. Oh, oops. No, we can't talk about that. But anyway,
by the way, at some point we should get into this. This is a total aside. I think I'm starting to like fast rods. I like slow rods.
Makes sense.
Too.
Your generation does. You've never got to fish a slow rod.
I mean, I was talking. I can't remember the.
I don't like super slow. Yeah, I do too.
I mean, I fish some.
I do. That's a total lie.
I fish some pretty slow rods. I fish a lot of glass, which is.
Yeah, well, so I fish Fenwick glass.
Yeah, I mean, the first fly rod I ever threw was, my dad still has it. It's like a early '80s Fenwick, whatever they're.
Iron feather.
I don't know. It's their cheapest rod. Like, it is heavy and slow, and it's.
I don't like heavy and slow.
No, it's not my favorite.
But my deal with rods is that they're, it's like when Kurt came in and we were shaking one of the rods and I pick up a 6-weight and looked at him, I shook it once and he says, yeah, it's better with an 8. Then it's an 8.
Right.
If it's better with something else, then it is not.
It's not this.
Yeah. So all you got to do, if you want a 5-weight in most rods, is go grab a 4 or 3. And you'll have, but they're coming around. The rods companies are all coming around. Sage is coming around. I don't know about Loomis so much. I haven't dealt with them for a while, but I mean, even Winston got fast for a while and they shit the bed. I mean, after you fish so long, you realize now, and I will tell you that a good aunt, you're a great caster. Great casters don't need to have any they can adapt very quickly, and you get to do more things with a quick rub.
Well, what really helped me was like working in this fly shop, you know, during downtime, I just go grab a rod off the wall and wiggle it. And then, and just like try to compare to all these other different actions. You start to realize, you start to try to find that sweet spot for every different rod. Like I was just in the...
Every single rod has a sweet spot, every company. And by the way, it's almost always the five weight, because you build your test mandrel for your rod. You don't build a 2 through 12 weight mandrels. You build a five weight and you extrapolate by mathematical equations out what the other ones are going to be.
Yes.
You do not go and build all these mandrels and just start testing them.
Right.
I mean,
that's an expensive process.
Mandrel's the most expensive thing in the whole process.
Yeah.
So you grab the five weight always, which everybody does anyhow in this zone. And then, you know, but that isn't just because it's too fast doesn't mean that you can't just drop to a four, because if the four weight feels more like a five weight, feels more like a four weight, because it is. And that's real simple.
Yeah.
But you're a great caster. Bruce Richards, guys like that, Howard, pick up any rod. They'll adapt to it so fast, they don't even give a shit. It's a tool to them.
Do you remember the first time I touched a bamboo rod?
No.
We were out in the yard.
Oh, that one day.
I remember you were watching me from the porch. And like the first two casts, I could not get the line to go out from behind me.
Yes, I do.
That and was then it. I was like, okay, wait, let's find this thing. And I was able to slow it down.
That was Michael Rex One Piece.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you were like hitting the sumbitch like it's a fucking Ferrari. And it was it's not going anywhere.
No, it wasn't going anywhere. And then I slowed down, figured it out, and then we ended up having a distance competition with those bamboo rods in the parking lot.
We'll get to one. We can do another one of those on rods, because
yeah,
somehow I've got to be this guy who hates all $1,000 rods. Not true at all. I mean, I just said you don't have to pay for them anymore. But it doesn't mean you don't. There's a new Sage out that I kind of dig, and I'll have it. I mean, I like my classic. So... But I just go down. I just, you know, it's very simple for me. I got tired of fighting with some bitches. So I fish a 5 weight, 9'5". Now I just fish a 4 weight or a 3. And and I put a 5 weight line on it because that's where it is.
Okay, two things that we got to talk about. One, there was a comment asking, because we announced our partnerships with Hardy and Squala yesterday. A lot of people were asking, is the Streamer X gone, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
So to clarify, Kelly has partnered with Hardy Reels to build his Streamer reel.
Correct.
Our podcast has partnered with Hardy, the brand.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean Kelly's designing rods for Hardy.
I designed those rods, yeah. But I'm not under contract.
Right, and it doesn't mean Echo's Streamer X is gone.
No, this, you know, when Tim Ray Jeff called me to go with Echo, it wasn't Echo. There was no Echo. It was Airflow. And then went into Echo, into the Korean rods, and St. Croix was crapping the bed and not producing rods, and then weren't warrantying them, and it was pissing me off. And so we went to Echo, and we basically just copied the rods. I mean, they're as close as we could make them.
Yeah.
And because it was a rod designed for a purpose. It was just, and so they're still there. And if I went to work for Sage or Hardy or whoever in the world was out there, that rod I'm sure will stay there. Just won't,
yeah.
It doesn't have, everybody knows I designed it. I don't know if it's got my name. I don't know if it does. Just they know I designed it.
Right.
And so, you know, I've talked to Hardy because about designing rods, but I don't know if I want to go into the high end rod market.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of great $600 rods out there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I've thrown a handful of the Hardy high dollar rods. And like,
I fish the shit out.
That Marksman Z that they had, that Howard brought out. I mean, I watched you guys fish them all day. And we pulled up to 8 Mile. I was like, hey, can I just see that for a second? I threw it a couple times. I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's something I got to get my hands on.
I forgot the name of the salt one.
I think that's the Marksman Z.
Is the Z the salt? Was it the, there's a Marksman and there's, well, whatever.
Marksman Z is the salt.
Is that the salt thing? As the streamer stick?
Yeah.
It's as good as I've ever fished.
It was smooth.
I mean, period. And we discuss, but I mean, at some point, I mean, you got to stop putting lipstick on the pig. A rod can only get so good, right? And if you can design, it shouldn't take that much to do it. You know exactly, if you're worth a shit, I would hope after 50 years in an industry, you know what you want in a rod.
What about a couple hundred?
Years?
Yeah.
300 plus.
Yeah, Hardy's going to come up.
Well, that's my point. I mean, who's designed the dam? Howard.
Right.
I mean.
We talked a lot about Howard.
I would think that was enough. But then you go into Gary Loomis. I mean, everybody's got their idea. Steve and Tim Rajeff, and they both got it. I mean, Steve worked for Loomis forever. I would hope those are the best distance rods on the planet, because he is, right? And so, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, who it is, it's just like, we didn't have these options 40 years ago.
Right.
Jesus, there's 1,000 rods. That was my whole point of the $1,000 rod thing. You can buy 400. Shit, I'm still fishing that damn kit rod.
Yeah.
I still haven't exceeded the action that I like better than that kit rod. People think I'm bullshit until they see it in my boat.
Right.
I love that stuff. Cortland 6-weight, that's my new, that kit rod,
I threw salmon flies on that
3
one
years now? 2 years.
Two.
I have not fished a different 6-weight. I mean, occasionally I'll fish my Berkheimer streamer. I love to fish that for dries.
Yeah.
I love that rod. But I think 2 years now, if people look in my boat, they're going to see streamer X's and they're going to see 2 kit rods.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, they have the reels on them still. Yeah. And the lines that came with
them. Yeah, I
know. You just need to, it's like a skier, anything else, a golf, anything on earth that you had tool, hammers for Christ's sakes. I remember framing when I was a kid, getting in arguments like you're going to start fighting over the better hammer handle for doing framing.
Totally.
There's never been a more ape business than racing hammering nails.
Yeah.
And you got that. Everybody, oars. On drift boats.
Oh, totally.
Oh, my God. You can get in a fist fight any night of the year.
I
wouldn't run them skull cut sons of bitches if I was paid. Yeah, well, kiss my ass. Yeah. You know, and running plastic blade. Dougie Pauline's been running plastic blades his entire life. Right. Loves them.
Some people like Ben. Some people don't like it. Yeah.
It's all the same.
It's personal.
Same shit. Chicks.
Two things. Never mind. One, I need to clarify. I told a story on, I guess it'll be 2 podcasts ago. We're all screwed up.
We aren't.
Howard. Yeah, I am. Sorry, that was the royal we. I meant me. Howard was kind enough to comment on one of our podcasts, which it scares me that he listens.
Yeah.
It just,
and maybe does that because I listen to his.
Yeah, well, what scares me is how many people there are out there that are like vastly better anglers, tires, more knowledgeable than I am, and they're sitting here listening to me talk. But thank you. I appreciate your support. Howard says, thanks for the shout out, guys. I'll buy you bribe beers in April. On a serious note, Braden's comment about casting into the wind. It was actually around 24 years ago when working on one of the first rods I was involved in developing for Hardy alongside the great Hardy Spaycaster, Andy Murray. Not the tennis player, I presume. When a voice came from behind me on the old Hardy casting pond, you'd better turn around and cast into the wind if you're able to, young man. It was by then a retired Jim Hardy. Talk about pressure. One of my great regrets is not having had the opportunity to fish with him. So
wow.
I give myself about a 20% accuracy on that story recanting. I screwed that one up royally.
But, it's all right.
The gist of it was
don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Right.
I did. I told you I found that antique spay rod.
Yeah.
And I immediately was a little perplexed on couple, then I realized they were the wrong guides, but that was the only thing it was. And I sent it to Howard, and I said, what is this thing? Because I wasn't sure it was like a mooch rod or something, just the way it really long handles. Mm-hmm. And a big rubber butt. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know, and by the era, because it was an early 1900s rod, and I said, what is it? And he goes, a rod that would break Braden in half.
I got to find the, he had a good one the other day. He's such a witty dude.
By the way, super intelligent guy. By the way, if you go, I haven't subscribed to this magazine in a while just because of the Queens VAT tax, but it's not it is a plug. This is a great, these guys are still talking about fishing and not about going fishing somewhere. All the magazines in the U.S. now, I just think
it's all destination bullshit.
I can't stand them. There's nothing on fishing, and there's nothing. this magazine, and what it is, and I'm sure it's still around. I don't know what year this is, but it's a different perspective to what we were talking. If you look through there, you'll see some of the flies that show it end up in there, to me, look like a sixth grader tied them in their second day. And there'll be a full tutorial on it. And it'll be somebody that's really good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa. And then you'll see an Oliver Edwards, or you'll see, you know, Jardine or somebody, and it's like, holy shit. But they still talk technique, and they still, I'm re-upping mine. Something happened when I couldn't get it for some reason. But it's a great, if you love fly tying and technique stuff, it's really good. Cool. I dig it.
The last thing I wanted to mention was the, just the similarity in what we were talking about with rods. Like, actually, I had both these conversations with Parker Smith, one of our fishing guides.
He's still alive.
Yeah, yeah. I text Parker every now and again.
Parker, my daughter wrangles me into these. She works for Big Brothers Big Sisters.
Yeah.
So I think Mel and I just sponsored their bowling thing.
Nice.
Things, which
is cool.
Got to get a team together.
Yeah.
Maybe Johnny could win this one. Yeah. But Parker always donates his time.
Yeah.
He's a stand-up dude.
Parker's good people. In the words of Jeremy Clark, he's good people.
Yes.
But Parker, you know, he's an outstanding
skier. He guides, by the way, on the Yellowstone, independent of us.
Montana Fly Fishing Outfitters,
I believe.
MT Fly Fishing Outfitters. I'll
post it up. He still works for us, but he's independent now. And
if you want to fish the stone.
Yeah, he's money.
He's great. He's a great fishing guy. He's a cool dude. But we were talking about skis. We actually had this conversation about skis and fly rods, and I thought there was a lot of parallels where, of course, I ordered this pair of Nordica Unleashed 108s in a 180, and I texted him saying, hey, I got these skis. He goes, dude, you're going to want the 190. Like, it's not enough ski. Get more. And he was spot on. It's not enough ski. So if anybody wants them, I'm selling them. But then he made the same it's the same ski, but the 190 ski is so much better than the 180. I think it's 186.
It's always been like
that. And we talked about the Echo Trout, right? The old one before the Trout X. I've got a 5-weight. I got my dad a 6-weight. My dad listens, so sorry, Mark. He goes, that 6-weight, absolute piece of junk. 5-weight's one of my favorite rods ever.
That's the way it works.
And it just depends.
5-weight's always the sweet spot.
Right.
But there's when I was a kid.
But he said with the Trout X, he likes the 6-weight a lot better than the 5.
When I was a kid, it doesn't matter. It's just there will be that. That'll be the sweet spot.
Yeah.
And it will be, rather you like it, doesn't mean every 5-weight. It's just that's the first rod that comes out of, and all iterations are by math. Not by, you know, somebody going out and you're not going to take the time to build 11 more rods and have them all tested. So there's never always. When I was a kid, I remember the Strato, Rosnell Strato, I think it was the 200 or the 210.
Yes.
That's the only ski race.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like everybody had a pair of these brown piece of shit and they're and I was a freestyle guy. I'm like, oh God, it takes my legs out from under me. Couldn't bend the shovel on that piece of shit. But it's always been that way for everything. I mean, reels, you don't go down that one. But it's always been that way. That's why you got to be informed, though. That's why you hope you can trust. That's why I hope people trust me, because I don't ever bullshit on it.
Right.
And I don't, and frankly, I dirt the ones I don't like. I don't want to kill it because I just say this is not the reel. I wouldn't say this is a piece of shit on anything. Because I could hand it to you or, you know, Charlie Craven or Howard or Johnny, and every one of you say it's the greatest thing I've ever used in my life. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So I just share what I like, and hopefully there's enough resource that everybody goes to somebody else.
Yeah.
And look at what everybody, see what Brian Fletcher thinks about it. Think what the guys out in TCO, what do they think about it, right? What does Joe Del Schneider, what does Bucky think?
Right.
There's just, it's so easy to go find everybody's opinion.
That's why it's important to call fly shops. I mean, like going back to the ski thing, just a brief aside, I sold all my Alpine stuff like 5 years ago, exclusively tele-skied for a few years and then started instructing. So I had to buy it all back. And I started to realize what I like and don't like in skis. I've got 12 pairs of skis right now and I'm starting to sell them off. So I figured out which ones I like. But it is so daunting given that these skis change by length,
right? To this, before you go on, the average cat doesn't go ski every day.
Right.
And the average cat doesn't go fish every day. And so you don't get the opportunity to go through 12 rods or 12, if you're not in the industry and you're just a casual.
Totally.
That's why you got to really rely on that shop guy.
Exactly. That's what I'm getting at is like.
And if the first time they say, oh, you got to have this Helios, this number 20, whatever it is, go check a different rod. Make sure you don't get sold.
Yeah.
Don't get sold. Go ahead, sir.
No, that's exactly the point, right? Is that find somebody you can trust who like has this experience and is aware of these differences that like, yeah, maybe the 5-weight Helios is great and the 6-weight isn't as good.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, try to find somebody you can trust that has gone and done this testing. I mean, and we'll be honest with you. And that's what Parker's helped me a lot with that stuff.
The good news on rods is most people know where they fish.
Right.
And most of you are in 5-weight water.
Yeah.
Just so you can be sure.
Yeah.
I mean, most trout are 5-weight trout.
Yep.
No matter where you live, don't give a shit. You can fish in New Zealand too. You're still not going to catch all 7-pound fish.
No.
Right?
And I mean, I do, but yes, for the normal people.
Normal people aren't. And so it does take it down a notch that there's a lot. You have to have hype in industries. You have to. It'd be boring as shit if you didn't. Right? And so have you ever seen an ad come out for a new rod that says, you know, this is like the one we built 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not
unchanged.
Really that, not really changed yeah. anything. You know, this is your grandpa's rod.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's always brand new.
Oh,
the
man.
Latest,
more
greatest.
Modulus, more this, more recoil.
Carbon fiber.
Oh, yeah.
Latest.
You know, more dampening.
That would be a great ad campaign is unchanged.
Yeah. Unchanged,
the
still
same.
Perfect.
Yeah.
They could have, you know, I said that to Sage, but I still worked there. It says, you know, if we just kept the RPL. Just this rod and did all the other ones and change them, but just keep the Ford F-150.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Just keep it. Just, it's great. It's just
broke.
It not broke.
No.
Yep. And it is what it says it is. It's actually the weight it says it is.
Yeah.
And everybody, and then they could have all the other glitz and stuff.
What do you think of the Loomis Asquith?
I think the name's kind of funky.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says it and doesn't make a joke about it.
It's always Asquith.
Yeah.
Asquith.
And it never
stayed. For the first time I heard about it, I was like,
oh
I thought
God.
It was a
every
joke.
Place that, I did too. And I thought that when I first heard it, I thought you guys were making fun of it.
Yeah.
I don't think,
by
honestly,
the
I don't
new
think.
New one is almost $1,700.
$1,635. Oh, I thought it was more than that.
$1,630. Actually, Yellowstone Angler has them on for $1,750.
Yeah.
Which I was just over there. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but I know he listens. So shout out to you. He's a great dude, super nice, from Michigan.
All the guys over there are great.
Yeah, they've always been super friendly.
You're talking about Anderson's place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great fly shop.
George, kick your ass if you weren't nice.
No, but they're always super friendly. Great guys over there. If you're in Livingston,
Jamie?
Stop by there.
I don't know all the kids.
I'm so bad with names. He's a little bit younger than you.
Jamie.
From Michigan. Is,
oh, no. Oh shit!
He's got glasses.
Yeah,
great guy. Comment
Chris
on here.
Chris loves him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Yes. He's super fun.
Well, I hate that's my forget names.
But yeah, he. I was just wiggling a bunch of rods that they had in there that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I grabbed the old and new Asquith, and that's a fast stick. That's a.
It's been Loomis's stick forever.
Yeah,
is to build fast rods.
Right.
That's why you have.
I mean,
Steve
if it was
Ray Jeff.
If it was blown 40,
yeah,
be a great stick.
Yeah. Everybody's, again, that's why there's so many.
That's why there's so many. Personal preference. All right, let's wrap this one up. You got any final thoughts here?
This thing didn't piss me off as much as I thought it would.
Yeah, you didn't.
I think it actually kept me in kind of hypnotized, so I didn't. It might be like looking at a king cobra.
Yes.
Bites me, it's going to take him 5 days to die.
I'm glad you chose king cobra instead of something else.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was going to be a real pain in the ass, but I think it kind of stopped me from doing this all day.
Yeah.
I don't know why I did
Well,
that.
And we'll see, by the way, if we've got hiccups with this stuff, we apologize. Like Kelly said in the last episode, I'm not a media guy. I'm becoming one.
You should see this little box he's got sitting over here.
Yeah, I'll take
here.
A photo of this thing. We've drastically complicated.
Should be some like disco shit.
I mean, it looks like a DJ setup.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it is. It's
going to get regular colors on it.
It's pretty fruity.
But no, I have nothing. What do we got? What'd you ask me?
Man. I don't remember, but if there's hiccups in this, we apologize. We're going to, iron this
we
out.
We might redo
point.
It if we did.
Yeah.
That'd be a long one. But we are going to start doing more tying videos. So, and we're going to start doing a lot of different stuff. Yeah. We've been kind of waiting to see. Frankly, I wasn't sure this thing would make it this long. So,
but we also, and thank you again to Squall and Hardy, our sponsors. We were able to upgrade, obviously, our podcast gear. Got new camera gear too. So fly shows.
We have a new shop being built around our camera gear.
Yeah.
Yes. The new shop, by the way, for those who aren't watching, is we should be dried in the end of next week.
Chris sent me a video as he was pulling out of the driveway last night that gave me like scale for the first time.
Yeah, it takes a while. It's giant.
It's huge.
We're going for the world's biggest fly shop.
We used to throw footballs in the spot where the what is this going to be, the south wing?
Yeah, whatever you want it to be.
We always joked growing up about like, I think it came from watching Batman, but like calling something the east wing.
Yeah, like, I think it comes from the White House, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah, I learned it from Batman, but yes. In like college.
The east wing.
Like you were
invited. You could do that quite well.
Yeah.
I think it's 161 steps to get to the other end. Jeez. It's a massive, we brought in 6,000 new patterns. 42 new fly bins.
Johnny's not
just
have
in one
company.
Johnny's going out of his freaking mind. He's going to die. He, I think we brought in almost 3,000 new materials.
Crazy.
Psycho.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet.
And we've got a tapper on the rod rack.
Yeah.
Just so you're wondering. Don't know what beer it is yet, but we have it. But yeah, we'll that's going good. So we should start updating that pretty quick because now we can. Before, when we were doing it, there's nothing really to show what we were doing.
Oh, but it's getting framed out.
We did show the demo.
The destruction
was pretty
cool.
Badass. That was badass. Yeah, it'll be cool.
Awesome. Let's wrap it up. Thanks again to our sponsors. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
See ya.